Welcome to the Safe Space Podcast. We're here with DJ Crystal Lake. Would you like to introduce yourself a little bit?
Yeah, what's up, everybody? I'm Crystal Lake. Basically, I take history and news and subjects that probably seem complicated, and I turn them into fun and interesting things. So you could be like, yeah, why didn't I know that? And then you'd be like, oh, that's why I didn't know that.
Yeah, so actually this month is Black History Month in the UK and LGBT History Month in America.
Yeah.
Which is a strange mix-up. We don't know why they've done them at the same time, opposite ends of the calendar.
Yeah.
Me and Emma think it's because two emails said the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Somebody got mixed up.
They got mixed up. They were like, oh, oops.
Nah, it's all done, so they're going to carry on with it forever.
It's okay. For me, I get to celebrate it twice. Like.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we thought it would be a good idea to do a show about the black queer people in the civil rights movement who we may not acknowledge so much, or who haven't been
erased out of history.
Who have been erased out of history and haven't been given their due.
Yeah. Did you know that the March on Washington, where Martin Luther King made this speech, was majorly organized by this homosexual Bayard Rustin?
Well, you gotta tell me more now.
Bayard Rustin was an openly gay civil rights activist whose contribution to the movement has been somewhat erased and forgotten. Rustin was raised a Quaker, and in 1944, he was jailed as a conscientious objector after refusing to fight in World War II. It was then that he developed his belief in nonviolence, and he even said that the only weapons we have is our bodies.
What do you think about that?
When I gotta beat somebody up, I'm like, damn, the only thing I have is my body.
It's very true.
No, but, I agree with it, but then there's certain things where, I know Bayard was, like, super into, like, peaceful protests, mm-hmm. and sometimes I'm like, I want to get a little loud.
Yeah, I want to get a little loud.
Get in your face a little bit.
Get a little bit of feisty.
Yeah, a little bit. But also he made so many valid points. Like, this guy is so important, and then it just, like, amazes me how I've never really heard about him until, like, honestly, I haven't heard about him till recently.
Not literally.
Following the war, he became increasingly involved in the civil rights movement. And in 1956, Rustin first met with Martin Luther King in Montgomery, Alabama, to show support to the Montgomery bus boycott. And the young king would be forever changed after his encounter with Rustin.
Okay.
Dr. King had read Gandhi, but at that point, he hadn't accepted pacifism as a way of life. King's home was full of guns. It was Bayard Rustin and a few other pacifists who really encouraged Dr. King to accept pacifism as a way of life. He was like, put that gat away! And King was like, brr, 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 brr. And then Rustin was like, yo, like, you don't need them guns.
Yeah, and then Dr. King took that with him for his whole life, basically, right?
Yeah, because word for word, Dr. King said, pull up with the stick, let it hit. And Rustin was like, yo, bro, you gotta chill. Yeah. And that's, yeah. Anyways.
That's the read on it.
This meeting will mark the beginning of a long, sometimes tenuous relationship between the two. Now, in January 1953, Rustin was arrested for sexual activity in a parked car with two men. Ah, I see Rustin. He pleaded guilty to the charge of sexual perversion and served 60 days in jail. And so King and many others were aware of Rustin's sexual orientation and arrest. However, Rustin showcased brilliant strategies and organizational skills, so Rustin's sexual orientation was overlooked.
Okay, they didn't mind.
Yeah.
Because he was like, good at it.
Exactly. They were like, oh, you're doing all that gay stuff, but, like, also, you're a genius, so.
You can relate, right?
Yeah. I think we could all relate. However, in 1960, all hell broke loose. The movement was organizing a protest at the Democratic National Convention, because they felt JFK was not doing enough on civil rights. And so the Democratic leadership sent Black Congressman Adam Clayton Powell to stop the march before it happened. Powell sent a message to Dr. King saying, if you proceed with the protest, we will accuse you of having an affair with Rustin.
Jesus.
Yo, imagine. like, so the organization got scared, and Dr. King believed it could be a fatal blow to the whole movement. I'm just saying, imagine I'm trying to talk to a hot mama and somebody's like, actually, Crystal Lake is straight. I would be so mad.
It's the same kind of sabotage, really. So that's crazy, right? They tried to bring Dr. King down as a gay.
Yeah.
JFK.
Yo, I'm actually so shook. He was like, no homo. Look, all Dr. King had to do was say no homo.
Yeah, and then he would have been fine.
Yeah, and everybody would have been like, oh, okay. He decided to distance himself from Bayard, and Bayard reluctantly left the organization. Bayard worked outside of the organization for 3 years, and the movement saw very little success until 1963, when Martin decided to slowly reintegrate Bayard in to help organize the 1963 March on Washington.
Okay, so they couldn't do it without him.
Exactly. They were like, yo, honestly, Bayard is really, he is him.
Yeah, he is pretty fundamental.
Yeah.
It's kind of shocking we've forgotten about him.
I feel like he was like, y'all gonna be begging for me to come back. You know what? You know when you quit a job and you're like, watch this thing crash and burn. You're gonna wish you didn't leave me. I know when he got that phone call, he was like, oh, really? You need me now? All right, let me help you.
Yeah, exactly.
Then he want to pull up with the March on Washington, like the biggest thing the world has ever seen at that time, like
bunkers.
Yeah. Now let me continue. Let me tell you some more because it's about to get crazy. So it didn't really go that smooth for Rustin because some people within the movement still opposed his involvement. And so instead, King elected a close friend and mentor of Bayard, A. Philip Randolph, knowing that he would appoint Bayard as a deputy and Bayard would really be the one who would lead the march.
Bayard's the one behind the whole thing.
Yeah, they were kind of sneaky with how they did it.
It's quite shocking that he took that as well. But
I know. Like, honestly, he was like, I'm really thinking for the people. Like, that's when you really have to realize, like, that something is, like, bigger than you. Because I know he was like, I have all these moms.
Yeah.
Like, I would have been like, yo, are you dead serious? I just helped you so much, but all right. Anyways. Demonstrations in Washington, D.C. are now a common occurrence, but what Randolph and Rustin were proposing was audacious. 100,000 protesters descending on the Capitol was unprecedented.
Okay. So before that, there was nothing like this?
No, like, people were not doing that. They were like... It probably sound mad when they were talking about it, but, like, yeah, for them to be able to do that, especially back then, like, what? Bayard Rustin got to work with no social media or cell phones or emails. Like, he gathered a team and organized the 1963 March on Washington in just 8 weeks.
That's just bonkers, isn't it?
I'm shook.
How would you even go about that?
I will call my friends to be like, yo, let's meet up at McDonald's, and about two of them will go.
And yeah, we don't have that kind of organizing power these days.
So yeah, icon.
Yeah.
One thing Bayard said was, what you have to understand is that the march will succeed if it gets 100,000 people or 150,000 or 200,000 or more to show up in Washington. It will be the biggest rally in history. It will show the Black community united as never before. United also with whites from labor and the churches from all over the country. 250,000 people will ultimately be there, and the most iconic and revered speech in history would be delivered.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So 250,000 people showed up.
Yes.
And he only aimed for 100,000.
Like... He was doing Beyonce things back then.
He was doing Beyonce things before
Barbie
Beyonce.
Barbie things. It's one of those things where it's like, imagine this person was never born. That whole march would have never happened, and the world would literally be different today. Like,
that is crazy. What would the most famous speech even be? The Rocky one. What's even second to that?
Right? Like, that is such a huge moment in history. Mm. Like, I don't know what the world would be, but it probably wouldn't. It wouldn't be like how things are now. And that's just something from so long ago.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I even remember they showed us the speech in school. when we were like 8 or something, and they made us like rewrite it. Like, yeah, we wouldn't have had that to study. We wouldn't have had that moment to like, even as little kids, we were like, well, okay, this is like really something else. So
yeah.
Well done, Bayard.
Yeah, yes, Bayard.
So, Crystal, do you know James Baldwin?
Yeah, I have a little fun fact.
Mm-hmm, go on, hit me with it.
We have like basically the same astrology chart. So he was lit because I'm lit.
Wow. Okay. Do you think you share a lot of the same?
Yes. Icon. Icon.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, honestly, when I was reading up about him before, right? I was like, okay, American that moved to Europe, you know, also into history, also a bad B, also out here like, I don't know.
Way with work. Being
a hoe a little bit.
Well, that, yeah.
Yeah, I just feel like I have a lot of similarities with James.
A kindred spirit.
Yeah.
Nice.
Anyways, yeah.
Well, for those that don't know, James Baldwin is one of the most articulate, captivating writers in American history, in my opinion. Would you agree?
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
However, did you know that his publisher told Baldwin to burn his second novel, all because of its homosexual nature?
Dang, I mean, we ended up reading it anyway, so mm-hmm. He was like, ha ha, got it.
Got around it somehow.
You know, he was like, let it burn, let it burn.
His publisher believed that it would alienate him from both a black audience and a middle-class white audience that he gained from his first novel. All because of its gayness, slayness, you know.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give you a little story of James Baldwin and how on his rise to success.
Okay, cool.
It's a bit of a rocky road. So he was raised by his extremely loving mother, but his extremely harsh stepfather in Harlem, New York City. And at just 13 years old, he was a preacher.
Yeah.
Just mad. A 13-year-old preacher.
Like, get your little behind out of it. Like, you want to tell me about life? Yeah. Did your balls even drop? Like,
well, it turns out he's pretty good at it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Okay, James.
This is where he learned to use words to evoke emotion, I think, in his audience, you know? And at 15, he became a close friend with the American Harlem Renaissance artist, Beaufort Delaney, who was a gay artist who mentored James. And James said that he was the first living proof that a black man could be an artist.
Aww.
Which I thought was pretty cool. So that was 15. Then,
dang.
Yeah, he was getting around.
Yeah. Wow.
Then when he was 17, he left home and he continued to help his large family by working odd jobs all over New York City. But the racism that he encountered during this time was debilitating and evoked rage in Baldwin from a young age. Then tragedy took hold at 19 whilst he was living in Greenwich Village. James had met his best friend, Eugene Wirth, and they were extremely close, and a lot of people thought James might be in love with Eugene. But Eugene was straight, apparently. But whatever happened, James loved him a lot. And unfortunately, Eugene took his own life in 1946 and jumped off the George Washington Bridge.
Dang.
Yeah. Which was like a huge moment in Baldwin's life. And it became clear to him at that point that he should leave America and escape the hypocrisy and the dire situation of what it was like to be a black man at that point in America.
Whoa.
He said at the time, my luck was running out. I was going to go to jail. I was going to kill someone or be killed. And so he went to Paris. And he found himself alone in Paris with just $40 in his pocket, which is brave.
Yeah. Honestly, no one hustles like a New Yorker. I'm clearly a New Yorker. Now I'm going to be talking about New York for the rest of the podcast. I promise I won't. But yeah, wow.
He said that he fell in love with the city and he felt that he had somewhat been removed from the racial and sexual discrimination that he had experienced in the US.
Right, yeah, because it wasn't as strong in Europe in general. But like, I mean, no, it wasn't as strong in Paris as, as it was even in like New York. It's so wild because like, even when you think about New York, it's like, New York is pretty open. Like, imagine the rest of America, too. Mm-hmm. That he was like, I had to leave this. Like, I even felt that when I left New York and I moved here. I was like, oh, wow, it's not that racist.
Really?
Yeah, or it's like not on the level as I was experiencing when I was like back home. Mm. Or it was just like, you know, there's racism, but it's just like in different ways. I think in America it's more in your face, and over here it's more like passive aggressive. Mm-hmm. But also it's not, I feel like there's just like the, I feel like the racism in America is just like just on such a level, and I can't even imagine like back then what he was going through, you know what I mean? So
yeah, I mean, I was quite shocked when I read it, because I thought like, how could it have been so different in 1940s Paris to 1940s New York? But like, yeah, it's really interesting that he had such a different experience, and he felt like he couldn't be an artist in New York. Yeah. And he went to Paris to like feel free from it.
Yeah, because if you think about it, they were kind of like almost like fresh out of slavery. Like his grandparents were probably slaves or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's true.
Like his parents were probably raised in a whole different way because of like his grandparents, and like, you know, things were like new. Like they didn't even have all their rights like that back then still, so.
Yeah, well, I think his parents moved from the south to the north in the Great Migration, which would, like, imply that his grandparents.
Yeah, because I'm even thinking, like, my grandparents, like, they're from, one's from South Carolina, the other's from, like, my grandma was from South Carolina and my grandpa was from Atlanta, and they both had experiences with the KKK. That's my grandparents. Wow. Like, imagine his parents.
Yeah.
His parents. Him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly. And I think that move for him freed him and allowed him to write, and he wrote his first novel in Paris, which was called Go Tell It on the Mountain.
Yeah.
And the novel was based on his own life and his own experiences growing up in Harlem, and it was greatly received by both black audiences and a lot of white middle class audiences from like Northern America. Which at the time there was basically no books about like the everyday lives of black people, but this book smashed it basically, so it was kind of a revolutionary novel at the time.
Yeah, and I even like hear what he was saying about like, I would have to leave America or I would get killed.
Yeah,
like, because imagine, like, he's doing his thing. Somebody would find him and try to, like, I don't know, throw a fiery, like, homemade bomb through his window or something like that. Like, just try to cause chaos or just, like, end his impact on the world.
That's what he said a lot. I actually watched a documentary about it last night. Mm. And it's him being filmed by, like, an English filmmaker who's come to meet him after this novel. And he's really annoyed at the filmmaker. Because he's saying like, you don't understand, because it's not that it's just freed me creatively, it's that I just don't worry that I'm gonna die every day as much here as in America.
I'm gonna just slide by a quick little thing that I'm gonna say to you that's gonna make you go crystal what. But when I left here, I was getting chased by the KKK. Surprise.
When you left America.
That was like, sorry, I should have dropped it. When I left America and I came here, like, I was in the middle of getting, like, I was being targeted by the KKK.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. And it was all because, like, I said something that was, like, against Trump. And people were, like, leaving their states, like, there were people from, like, Virginia, like, people from, like, Florida, driving up to New York to try to find me.
Wow.
Yeah, but that, it's funny because that wasn't even the main reason I left. Like, I left New York because, like, I fell in love with somebody.
Not a KKK.
How lesbian of me. Like, I was like, yeah, let's go, let's move.
I mean, it's two reasons to move. But
yeah,
like,
but yeah, I mean, even though, like, we split, she probably saved my life.
Wow. I didn't even know they were still, like...
I didn't either. Like, I was like, hold up, there's a KKK group in New York, and then the other ones, they were like hoodie hoo, they were just calling everybody else and the other KKKs, and they were just
Jesus Christ.
It was in the news and everything, and I was like, boop, I'm in London now, catch me if you can.
Wow. But that makes sure how much has actually changed at all in America.
Yeah, so, you know, even though, like, Yeah, it's weird. Like, that's what I'm talking about like how in your face it is in America. Like, like they were just like, yeah, we're gonna pull up to your job. Yeah, so I'm just thinking like how wild things are in America. What did he do with his second book? Like, how did that end up going?
So the second book, the first book went down really well. The second book, Giovanni's Room, was a lot more controversial because Giovanni's Room was about mostly white characters, all white characters.
Mm.
And more importantly, it was a love affair between two men. So the story's about this guy, David, who's a young American who travels to Paris, and he meets and has an affair with an Italian barman called Giovanni. Mm. However, ultimately, David is a bit of a coward and is unable to express his true feelings for Giovanni, which leads to... I'm not going to ruin the book, but
okay.
Doom. It's not a good ending. But he was told he basically couldn't produce this book by his publisher, and they refused to do it. They said that it would ruin his career, and that they won't publish the book and as a favour to him, which he was obviously furious about.
Yeah.
As a gay writer who wanted to write about this human experience, you mm-hmm. know. So, Baldwin was like, fuck off. I don't care what you think about my book, my gay book. I'm going to take it to some European publishers and see if they'll produce it.
Hey.
So he did, and he got it published, and it was a really successful book. And he did face criticisms. And Baldwin's identity as a gay and black man was questioned by both black and white people. And his masculinity was also questioned due to his apparent homosexual desire for white men. So people read it as he was attracted to white men. Oh. Which kind of labelled him as not black enough, almost, yeah, amongst the black audiences, but was also really controversial amongst the middle-class white audiences who didn't want to read about homosexuality at the time. So he did face a huge amount of criticism, but he didn't care. He was like, I'm going to put it out there anyway. It's my book. Yeah. And he got his mark out there really early out in his career, so no one could threaten him, you know, by being like, you're gay, I'll ruin your career. He got it out there. And it's a beautiful book. I highly recommend it.
Oh my goodness.
A lot of people in the civil rights movement labelled him as subversive. But a lot of people also supported him and stayed with him. It's important to remember. But I think what's most important is that he wasn't afraid to say what he wanted to say. He wasn't afraid to express himself as a black man or a gay man, no matter where he was.
Yeah. He wasn't... Yeah, afraid to, like, put himself forward, like, this is me, and accept mm-hmm. it or not.
Yeah, exactly. When he could have, like, avoided that whole second subject after everything he'd gone through as a young, like, black man in America. But he didn't. He just went out with it, which I think is...
Imagine writing something and you're just there like, well, they're gonna go crazy with this drop. Like, I'm about to close the store. Yo.
With everything you write. Yeah, so well done, James.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Crystal. That was some of the gays from the civil rights movement. There are many more, I'm sure, that we don't know about. But these two, I think, did a lot of good shit.
Yeah.
And they ought to be remembered for putting what they believed in forward despite the impact it might have had on them.
Yeah, like, literally changed the world. Like, mm-hmm. without them, the world would be a bit different. Mm-hmm. So, and it's just so mad to even think about it. But, like, yeah, very inspirational, especially for, like, even, like, I don't know, it even inspires, like, our own work. Like, mm-hmm. Imagine, like, you're just educating people on your reality or, like, getting people to question things mm-hmm. or why do you feel like this is wrong or why do you feel like this is right? I just love how powerful they were in their craft, and also just like being like, okay, you're gonna judge me, but I'm still gonna put this out, or you're not gonna wanna be on my side even though I'm fighting for you. I'm still gonna keep fighting mm-hmm. because like this is bigger than me. So yeah James, yeah Rustin, yeah.
Oh, and one last thing, Crystal, is there anything you want to plug?
Yes, so yeah, I'm Crystal Lake. You can find me on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok at DJ Crystal Lake. Learn your history, laugh a little bit. It's lit.
Thank you for listening, guys. Thank you, Crystal. Right, see you next time, guys. We're gonna go.
See ya.